Right, here we go. Good evening, everyone, or whatever the fucking time is where you are. You know the saying, life's a bitch and then you die? Well, some of us take that as an inspiration, and we have a little bit of a break in the middle of life. We rant the fuck out about everything. Well, everything about technology, that is. And to join me in this humble and noble pursuit, I have two people. Firstly, I've got long-time ranter on the show, Mr. Nick Ferrier. Say hello, Nick.
Hello, Nick.
And I've also got David Eastman, Eastmad on Twitter. Say hello, David.
Hello, David.
And then there's me, Tom. Hello, Tom.
Hello, Tom.
And we're going to rant about stuff, I guess. So who wants to start us off?
Well, can I first start with an apology to... to Cubic Garden, who we have blown out two nights in a row, and now we're doing it without him because he's gone out to do something more interesting instead.
Yeah.
And we can't find him anywhere. So,
we've tried
Ian,
his landline,
sorry, mate.
Mobile, and we can't get hold of him, so we're going ahead without him. So we're very, very sorry, Ian, for no grumpiness for you. You'll have to let the rage build up for another time.
I reckon BT have eaten him.
That's the other thing, that everybody's kind of bored now listening to him.
Well, that's the thing. Somebody was telling me that he wanted to rant about Facebook because he's now joined Facebook.
He's joined Facebook
and he's sending out invitations to events on Facebook. And he's actually, that's where I should have probably checked his Facebook rather than checking his Twitter. He's probably on there playing Farmville or something.
Absolutely. Can we all be cow avatars and see if we can find him?
Sorry?
We can all be cow avatars and just go to the farm and see if he clicks on us.
So, anyone want to start the rant fest off?
Well, you've got a good one. I think you should start.
Oh, I've got a link that was posted a while back on the 28th of August on Dave Weiner's website. Scripting.com, Scripting News, and it's called "What They Say About Age Is True," and it's part of a whole conversation that was going on in the blogosphere about ageism in the technology industry, and it's Dave Weiner saying that he's been sidelined in tech for quite a number of years. No one offers me a place in new startups. I can't get into the game. I can't imagine there's much chance for most other people in their 50s to play a role. And this is really fucked up. It's probably the reason why we keep going around in the same loops forever and ever, because we chuck our experience wholesale every 10 years or so. Which is probably true. There is a lot of reinvention in the technology industry. And
hello, that's true in every industry. There's very few industries in which, unless you're in pure, evil management, being over 50 is bad pretty much everywhere.
I think it's probably much worse in, say, the fashion industry or the media industry or advertising or marketing.
Absolutely,
Music or any kind of media industry, much more than it is in technology, because in technology you can be a fat, ugly old bloke sitting in your house writing awesome code and nobody can tell.
Absolutely.
But I think this might be the reason why he isn't... being called up for working in new startups, and he's been sidelined
because he's not fat, old, and ugly.
Well, because he's got the following paragraph: if you think there's much difference between JavaScript and C, you're dreaming, or between JSON and XML or plain text files, these are gratuitous reinventions. Yes, there have been some improvements, but I wouldn't know how to build a Facebook server farm. But they could learn a few things about aggregators from work of mine years ago that they've never seen, or outliners or CMSs or object databases. If you invest in tech companies, try bringing in some tech experience. It might push your comfort level. It also might make you much more competitive. And I just read that and thought, no, Dave, there's a reason why you're not getting employed, and it's nothing to do with age discrimination. It's to do with the fact that you're hoping people are going to be to hire you in a CTO position, and you don't know the difference between JavaScript and C.
Yeah, that's not helpful.
Or you can't really tell the difference between JSON and XML. Or you think that your object database that you've built is a really, really good thing, when it's not actually good enough to be able to cope with the tasks of a desktop outliner, let alone Facebook. Sorry, a desktop RSS reader.
I mean, it is difficult to employ your experience without sounding like a bit of a dick. He probably does know a lot of stuff, but he probably doesn't know very much about specifics. He tries to dip his toe and ends up sounding a bit stupid. He's written some good stuff. I mean, he obviously knows his tech, but that's a whole different ball game from sort of trying to get yourself employed in a small company that needs 3 or 4 people who have got to be hot on everything.
Mm.
Tough. You know, I think I'm sure he'll have I'm sure he has had no problem in large organizations, but you know, small teams can't afford any form of passengers whatsoever. So, you know,
I take issue with that. Small teams can't afford any sort of passengers. I think it's manifestly true that a bunch of people who work in startups are fucking clueless.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And so, therefore...
Well, it's part of the reason they're working in startups.
Well...
Possibly.
No, I think it's just manifestly true that in every team there are a number of passengers. To my mind, having worked in both, it's very difficult to build a team where there aren't any passengers... and sometimes you let people do that deliberately. You know, sometimes they burn themselves out, and so you try and give them some time off and carry them for a bit, and sometimes that doesn't work out in the end.
Well, and everyone has to start somewhere. Everyone has to start learning.
And yeah, and you bring on kids just the same as you might employ somebody old. I think, so Dave Weiner, I would suggest the problem with employing Dave Weiner is that it's Dave Weiner. He's a massively contentious figure. He's very argumentative and full of himself, and I wouldn't employ Dave Weiner because of that.
He's probably got a ton of baggage, which might be a problem for some companies. I think a bigger company shouldn't have an issue at all. But,
you know. He's also made loads of money, so I'm not sure why he's complaining. So.
Well, yeah. I guess he wants to be involved, right? And I can see that. You know, a lot of the people who've been complaining are saying, you know, I don't need to work, but I like to, and I can't find decent jobs that pay me the salary that I've, you know...
come accustomed to.
Yeah, well, not just that, but you don't want to sell yourself short. But the background thing to this... So the Dave Weiner specifically, I think, is very clear why nobody wants to employ Dave Weiner, because... we all had to listen to him for the last, 2 or 3 years ago, when he was really ranting at everybody about all sorts of different issues because people weren't implementing RSS in precisely the way that he wanted it. And I think that left a bad taste in a lot of people's mouths. But the background issue to this of whether to employ over 50-year-olds, I was kind of a bit stung about that because I'm 40, nearly, so I'm getting to be the kind of age where you think, oh yeah, this could be an issue, and I don't have anybody working for me who's 45, so I kind of feel, oh yeah, I'm ignoring these guys too. But no, I've never had one. I've never had it. Nobody has ever come to me as an over 50-year-old and said, you know, I don't know Python, I don't know JavaScript, but I do know, for 20 years I did C++ and I feel I understand TCP/IP and those kind of things, and, you know, give me a job. Nobody has come to me with those kind of things, but I don't know how I would feel if they did. But
you wouldn't be basing it on their age. You just say, come with your, you know, come look at your experience, look at what you know, and make a judgment per se. I mean, you're not actually going to look at their age, really, are you?
I don't think so, but the thing that worries me is what we just said about Weiner. Somebody said baggage, I think it was you, Dave.
Sure, yeah.
And that's what actually I think. I might actually be really ageist, because it's hard enough when the kids come into your company and go, NoSQL is a database, you know, MongoDB is a database that doesn't do joins, and this makes it web scale. I'm sure you've all seen that video that's been doing around this week.
I hate to say it, I have a MongoDB sticker on my laptop, but...
Oh yeah, I'm a fan of MongoDB because I've never used it, so I think it's great.
Like, I have used it, and it's actually, well, not perhaps good for the things people think it's good for, but it's good for other things.
It doesn't have joins, so it's web scale.
Interesting way of looking at it.
But anyway, you know, it's hard enough to cope with the kids coming in like that, but my sense is that if I employed a bunch of over 50-year-olds, or one or two even, I would spend a lot of my time going... Yes, it's not like it used to be. And yes, these things have all been solved several times in several ways in the past, but this is a new spin on that problem. And no, we can't just blindly reapply what you did 20 years ago. I know that you had a similar problem 20 years ago, and I'm almost as old as you, so I remember that. But
you ain't building it in COBOL. Fuck off.
Well, yeah, I get... Because... That's what you do get from a lot. I mean, certainly, I do that. I spend a lot of my time going, oh, for goodness sake, this is just like a Telnet stream. And I know that that's bad, but I'm in charge, so I'm allowed to. I don't know. I think it would be, I can see where the ageism comes from. And I don't want to say that's a good thing. That's obviously a bad thing, because not everybody is the same. That's the problem with any ism. But it would, I bet it's hard enough in tech. We're all so anal and stupid, as previously mentioned. And so once you get older, you're older and anal and stupid.
Yeah, it's an improvement.
True all that.
So if you're over 50 and you listen to this podcast, I personally would love to hear your views on what's happening in the world today and whether you would like to come and work in an exciting startup. And the other thing that pissed me off about this whole background argument was these guys going, it's outrageous, I have to take a massive pay cut or not work in startups. Well, yeah, because you do. Sorry, we're not going to pay you. Yes.
Large companies are called retirement plans for some people.
Mm. Yeah. Or if you're over 50, just, step off, put your slippers on, relax, get the hell out of it.
Yeah, it's but fine. Also, if you're a Silicon Valley millionaire, why not, do the whole Bill Gates thing? I mean, not necessarily at the scale Bill Gates has done it, but why not say, fuck creating a new business, I'm just going to go out and do really nice, awesome things for people. Start some kind of social enterprise or go and, work with a charity or something. If you've made enough money that you can say fuck you, then why bother with hanging around, debugging databases when you can go out and, cure some disease or the other?
Well, it's really frustrating, isn't it? Because, you go to a bunch of organisations which would be desperate for skills.
Yeah.
And, it doesn't matter if your skills are a bit long in the tooth, because you can just find problems to solve and solve them.
Or even if you're Dave Weiner and your primary skill is complaining about things, then there are plenty of people out there who would pay for you to complain about, how crap it is to get malaria in Africa, rather than talking about how, you can't find a good RSS reader on the Mac.
Alternatively, you could be a consultant, put him out to the company, you could complain about how bad that company is and get paid for it. And produce work. Brilliant.
Yeah, the Dave Weiner thing is really hilarious. I mean, if you think there's much difference between JavaScript and C, you're dreaming. Well, it only took me 3 minutes to write a list as long as my arm of things that are different.
Come on. I mean, he's got a really good point there, because there isn't much difference.
I mean, only objects, functional programming.
And objects are just structs with tied methods. I mean,
interpreted.
He might be one of those army people that think JavaScript is Java,
I don't think so. I think Dave Weiner knows what the difference between Java and JavaScript is. I have a lot of sympathy with those statements, right? XML, text files. It's all just, it's parsing. And if you can write a parser for a text file, formal text file language, you can write a parser for XML, or at least work with one. Mm. It you know, and JavaScript and C++ and C, they're very, very similar. JavaScript is Scheme. Scheme and C have got a lot of similarities. So, they're both basically third-generation languages. There isn't much different about them. That's what he's saying. If you can learn.
Well, yeah.
If you were good enough at C, you can learn JavaScript, and he's right.
You're taking it as half glass full, and I'm taking it as half glass empty in the case of Weiner. But, he's been wrong about so many other things that I tend to take the negatives
for. Well, yeah.
Anyway, and that's not to say I don't like Dave Weiner, because I've talked to him online, and he can be a bit paranoid and weird, but he is, at heart, a very nice person. But he can just be so wrong about so many things.
I think I read his last book. Can't see it on the bookshelf, though.
He hasn't written a book, does he?
I think so.
No, he's never written a book, I don't think.
Never written a book?
That's why you can't see it on the bookshelf.
That's why I can't see it on the bookshelf.
He's written a foreword to a book, but it's a book you would never read.
Oh, right.
I've read it, and it's, yeah.
That's what I was wondering, it was a different Weiner. Well, it was a Dave Weiner as well. No, okay.
Yeah, he's grumpy enough to be on this show, actually.
He is. And that's what really bothers me.
Yeah, it's the narcissism of small differences.
Yeah.
If he was actually not grumpy at all, it would be a different matter. Anyway, enough about Dave Weiner. Who wants to go next?
I'll go next, because we were also talking before the show about enterprise programmers, and this is kind of tied up with what we were just talking about. That you were saying, Tom, that you've been to OpenTech over the weekend, and I really wanted to go, but OpenTech was on at the weekend, and I was doing kid stuff, so I didn't. But one of the things that you were saying came out of that was a whole bunch of enterprise programmers going, oh wow, this is great, I don't have to write quite so much Java.
To be fair, it was only a few. It was mostly open sourcey people, but there were a few who came up afterwards and say, oh wow, this looks cool.
It happened to strike a chord with me, because I've seen quite a few things this week about enterprise programmers dipping their toes into other technologies and trying to do things a bit differently.
Other than Java.
Yeah. And I've also seen a lot of complaints. A sort of building head of steam of complaints about Java. And to a lesser extent, C-sharp. C-sharp does seem to make people a lot happier. But Java has particularly become... I myself have complained about it on this very show.
I'm thinking of putting on my CV Java and other legacy languages. But I'm just wondering for how many jobs I just like get thrown off immediately. But they're probably ones I don't want, that's the thing. It's a difficult decision to make.
Well,
I'm very tempted.
This is what I'm about to complain about. This is one of the things that irks me, right? Is that Java is a pain in the arse language, really. It's quite boring and all the rest of it. But all these enterprise programmers complaining about how boring it is, you fucking get paid for it, you cunts. You get paid for it.
And get paid quite well for it, that.
Absolutely, that's what I mean. By get paid, I mean you are well rewarded for having to work with this crap. That, let me tell you, it's not because we like you, it's because you work with that language that you get paid that money. You come and work for me... Right in Python, it's
and you
much
like
sexier.
Us.
It's much sexier.
That much.
That's right. Exactly. I won't pay you nearly that much, and I might shout at you more, and there'll be more rules. There'll be less rules about sexual discrimination. So,
brilliant.
Yeah, exactly. So I'm allowed to. My grump this week is really quite short. Put the fuck up or shut up, really, to enterprise programmers. It really annoys me that they moan so much about it.
Oh, God, it's so terrible.
I'm a bit confused. But obviously, as technically speaking, an enterprise programmer who actually hasn't used Java for about 5 years, I do see a lot of males, I don't suppose it's too bad to reveal this, that seem to suggest that if there isn't any Java work at the moment, what does one do? And you're reading to the end of this mail, waiting for them to say... I can always read about another language and try it, and they don't. And then you sort of mail in reply, you want to try learning another language because you're a developer, not a Java developer. And that causes quite a storm. Yeah, I think there is a bit of a problem. Somehow Java has got, I don't know, stuck in like sort of bubble gum under the table of corporates. And the expectation is that that is synonymous with development, which is, I find, fairly puzzling. There's a few guys with C#, same way. They expect that C# is just gonna be a continuing rolling stone, and that is what they develop in. And anything else they learn is sort of add-ons or superfluous to that. And although we always have a stable, static background language that we were all expected to know, and it's not quite Java now. Obviously, we're moving in between new times. I mean, it's going to be sorted out, I suppose, in 5 years' time or so. I don't have much regard for developers who can't be asked to learn another language, given that most of them are getting easier, not harder, except for Haskell, which is a little harder by a long way. So, I really think it's not your job to start saying, oh, I know one language and I'm just going to sit on that with my fat ass. I think you really should spread yourself out. And yeah, sure, enterprises don't care that you do or they don't. They just want you to pick up something and get on with it. And yes, of course, they'll say, I'm not sure about all the testing frameworks for Ruby. And then you go, oh, well, if there are some, yeah, sure, you have to carry a little bit of the can, but it's not so hard.
It's not that you have to learn the language. It's that you have to actually think and maybe make some decisions that haven't been prescribed by...
But that's your fucking job anyway.
By a combination of Oracle, your employer, and Eclipse.
Right, yeah, now that obviously that is an issue, yes. You have to replace every part of your little component world. Thank God no more Eclipse. Yes, you have to deal with database and the infamous scaling issues. And yes, of course, you know, what do you do about your enterprise's massive Oracle contract that you're just throwing away? Sure, but I mean, as is usual, you have to prove you have the right tools for the job. I don't think that's ever changed. If you do have the right tools, then you're right by definition, and oddly enough, other people start to follow you. Not a lot of sympathy for that position. Sorry. Learn something else.
It strikes me as I'm making loads of money in a enterprise where they don't give a shit about me. Oh, isn't it awful that they don't give a shit about me? That seems to be the prime.
It's wonderful that they don't give a shit about you, because they're just looking at results. And if you can produce results, on the rooftop, standing on your hand, that's fine. You know, that's fine. Mm. It's not always a bad thing that they don't necessarily care about you. You've got to care about you to some degree. Company will do some things, but not much. And the rest is up to you. It's not so bad.
I think that some of this though is your BT coming out, because BT is notoriously Skunk Works friendly. I ran
bits are, yeah, we know that. Bits.
I mean, you know, because you and I met, and I was running a fairly major Skunk Works inside BT without anybody knowing at all for at least a year.
Yeah, if you don't tell them, they'll never know.
I actually ran a course called How to Hack inside a massive enterprise telecoms company and showed people how to use ngrep. And TCP dump. I was amazed that they didn't know, but there you go. I can't remember if you were there at that one. I think you were. But But it's not specifically that. I mean, I think that's another problem, is that they just sit there going, oh, you know, I'm a Java programmer. No, I'm not gonna program in that. That's a big issue. But more specifically, it's when they're asked to do a bit of Java and they all moan and go, you know, equally the people who are all going, oh, but can't we use Scala? No, it's an enterprise. They don't want Scala. They want you to write Java because they've got 4 billion code lines of Java right now. And all of it's crap. But don't worry, because they're paying you really well to write it.
I remember the last transition, though. I mean, from C, C++ to Java. Same deal. Java was sort of put in front of you, but nobody quite knew what to do with it. And this was Oracle, oddly enough. The cliff starts to move apart, and you can either stay where you are or you can jump across. You have to do a little bit of work yourself. Is this going to work? What is this ridiculous memory? I'm not doing memory management thing anymore. You know, obviously, people thought that the world would come to an end, and it didn't. Same difference. I mean, obviously, and then people did try to rebuild everything with Java, which of course is fairly dreadful. But, you know, again, it was another transition. It's difficult for people to necessarily know in advance that that is the train they need to take, which is the reason why you've always, you know, got to move around a bit. And I don't think corporates get in the way. It's just that if you can't explain your actions, then, you know, you'll take the fall. And, you know, that's fine. It's no different in a small company. In fact, all that happens is you get a little bit more time to experiment in a larger company. I think it's a good thing.
Yeah, absolutely. You have more rules, and you might not get to work on exciting production stuff quite so much in a large company. But in a small company, there's more pressure, there's more direct going to live, there's less ability to make mistakes, working and less money. Working in a big company is fantastic.
And
more risk in a small company, so...
And less time for all your sacred best practices and patterns and all that stuff, because you've got to get shit done.
Absolutely.
And you haven't got 17 people who can write unit tests for each line you write.
So I think if you're an enterprise programmer and you've been whining a bit recently, shut the fuck up or I'm going to come around your house and beat you up.
I think that's fair enough.
Or we might actually, if you're entertaining at ranting about it, then we might invite you on the show.
Oh yeah, that's all right. If you're funny, we don't mind funny. Although that's not really been proven tonight so far.
Yeah, we need to get back onto the subject of iPads, Android, and Willy.
Oh no!
And how much BT haven't installed Ian's ADSL yet?
I'm sure there's a joke in there somewhere.
Right, shall we move on? Anyone got something you want to rant about? Dave?
I'm not really a rant. I mean, we're just having I'm just going to undo everything I've just said about being a corporate and complaining, actually. Just how bad Agile is in a corporate. Well, the joke is that you have sort of your normal Agile concepts as is written by whoever it is who wrote them some time ago. And, of course, you know, you start using them as soon as there's any pressure or any differences or any random stuff. You have to go back in yourself and sort of go back to Waterfall briefly before jumping back to Agile. And just as a joke, we sort of wrote up rules called half-assed Agile. And we put it on a website and just for a laugh. And the number of people, my God, who saw that and sort of retweeted that was massive, which must tell you that even maybe the previous point was correct. There's a lot of people who are just sitting in corporates and just whining about stuff, or something has gone wrong with sort of the interface between Agile and the acceptance in enterprises. God knows what, but it was a bit
funny. It's gone wrong. I think it's gone wrong totally. It's something else, really, that was prompting my thing about enterprise programmers, because there's a lot of I follow a whole bunch of people in ThoughtWorks, and the stuff that they kick up about Agile, obviously ThoughtWorks is a very Agile company, but the stuff that they kick up is just really shocking me. Stuff about Scrum and the way Scrum is being implemented in a whole bunch of places, and it just seems to have turned into a fucking religion really quickly, and gone from, you know, a sort of sensible religion where everybody just wanders along to church and goes and then goes home again, into a sort of crazy religion where it's sacrificing people and burning children at the altar.
It's you're speaking in tongues, except instead of incomprehensible babble, it's all like pair program.
Incomprehensible babble.
Yeah, no documentation.
Instead of speaking babble, they're just reading Java docs, which are close to babble.
The thing is
now deprecated.
The thing about Agile was that it was a recognition that you can't really. I remember getting involved in Scrum about 10 years ago, and to me it was just a statement of what I believed, which was, and that's why it's turned into a religion, which was, what I believe is that software is not an engineering principle. It's not an engineering discipline. It is a craft, it is more like carpentry than it is bridge building. The trouble is, this was impressed on me, the whole anti-engineering thing was impressed on me deeply, because I got chucked out of college for not doing the work that I was supposed to be doing and just hacking all day.
Naughty Nick!
Well, I wasn't very interested in doing what they wanted me to do. I was interested in doing the things that I wanted to do. And my dad is an electrical engineer and has been telling me for 100 years now, you are not an engineer, you never pay to be an engineer, you're not an engineer. And he's right. I'm certainly not an engineer. If they asked me to build a bridge, that would be a calamity.
I did technical drawing at O-level. I did it at A-level. I could probably build a bridge. How fucking useless is that?
You probably could draw one.
I could draw one. Obviously, I'm going to build one. But with this great Yugoslavian teacher, she was absolutely... She had something to do with building the Queen Mary. She was absolutely great. She's old school, kept on chucking people out of the class. She goes, you're alien, go out of class, you know, if you were late. It's like, absolutely brilliant. Sorry.
That's pretty cool.
You're alien?
Because you were late.
You were late, yeah. She said you were flying.
Or were some people in your school actually aliens?
I don't, God knows, quite possible.
It would be really funny. If I had her as a teacher, I would have just painted myself green and gone in with, like, you know, big rubbery fingers and be like, I'm come home now.
She'd probably let you in. She'd be fine. You know, if you come early and you were alien, it was fine, probably. But anyway, she'd tend to, flying saucers, people coming late. Yeah.
You're alien and you're late, get out.
Yeah, that's bad. Bad combo. You
know. It reminds me of a very pious RE teacher we had once, and somebody once mooted the idea of dressing up as Jesus and going in and seeing if she had a heart attack.
I was quite shocked recently to find that there were RE teachers who were religious. I didn't think it was allowed. I thought that... Because I remember at my school, my maths teacher was really religious. And he told me once that he wanted to be an RE teacher, but he wasn't allowed because he believed in God too much.
I know, it's a fair mix. For about, when I was in secondary school, for about half the time, we had this very pious old woman called Mrs. Carmichael, who, after having a javelin thrown in her leg at school sports day, had to retire. Or something like that. No, I don't think that would
actually... Retire hurt.
Correct?
She retired hurt.
Yeah, and then they replaced... They replaced her they replaced her with an agnostic who just decided it would be much more fun just to talk about Newcastle United for an hour and a half.
I think I'd prefer religion, to be honest.
Yeah, he was quite religious, but not about God.
Yeah.
Anyway, agile. Yeah. So. software to me is a craft. It's more like making a chair than it is, you know, building a bridge or making a table or something. But a one-off table every time. No, it's more like
not a reusable table.
Not a reusable
not
table.
An
well, you know,
table factory.
Reusable factory. In as much as you can take a table and you can, you know, you can eat pizza off it or you can eat roast pork off it. If it's the right height and, you know, all the rest of it, but not necessarily reusable in that it might be a table for a country kitchen and you couldn't take that into a dining room in Oxford. You know what I mean? And it's the same with software to me. And Agile was a recognition of that most software, some software needs to be really designed like a bridge. Software mainly to control things that are dangerous, like nuclear weapons and power stations.
Tory party.
Yeah, software to control the Tory party would have to be really well designed, I think.
No, it would just be an elaborate prostitute booking system. I know where the Tory party was 15 years ago.
Stuffing envelopes with money. Pretty difficult.
Now they just wear terrible clothes that make them look like a puff. Agile was just a kind of recognition of that. It didn't matter whether you were inside the enterprise or not. The best way to run the project was to, you know, get this kind of speccing process a bit more flexible, create the right expectations with your customers, and then tell the customers when you would deliver something and, you know, deliver it with parameters about what you could drop off. That it's all so sensible. The trouble is, they then turned it into a process. It's not a process, it's a conversation. That's the
whole thing. Agreement, yes.
Exactly. So in order to sell it to corporates, they kind of just made it into waterfall of, here's a thing, and it's got all these rules on it, and actually we're also going to add some Svengalis, because we think that'll be sexy. And so, you know, they've started... I saw a complaint this week about, I'm not going to tutor any more people who haven't actually programmed as being a Scrum Master. What? You mean you have been tutoring people who haven't actually progressed into being Scrum Masters?
Yeah.
How could that be possible?
There was a blog post recently called something like, How Agile Ruined My Life. It's just somebody complaining about how, you know, things were going perfectly well, and then somebody came into the company and decided to sell them Agile religion, and, you know, and then just shit went downhill.
I find that funny.
And they also were sort of pointing out how they'd come in and they'd say, oh, well, you know, all this new methodology will just, you know, in a couple of weeks it will just show it, you know, it will just speak for itself, the success will speak for itself. And then they said, and then immediately afterwards they spent half an hour talking about how wonderful it was. And I said, well, surely it will just speak for itself. I work alone, so I don't get much.
So who do you pair with?
My iPad.
Oh,
I've invested it with personhood now, so
I feel like
pair with me.
Do that, invasion of the body snatchers. Stand up and go. While pointing at you.
so do you, Neil? I remember when I was at PT a few years ago that they were trying to run. There was a number of projects that they were trying to run in a sort of semi-agile fashion. And apart from your complaint about having to swap out of agile when it all goes wrong, are you doing kind of mostly agile now, Dave, or is it?
Yeah, we are. I mean, as far as also, of course, agile has caught on. So every other male has agile. There's agile delivery, which is my favourite thing. Anyone can perform. I mean, you know, the cafe can do it. Agile delivery, as far as I can see. So agile has totally caught on to the extent where you have to nod to agile, even if you don't know what it is. So it's sort of
the
other way around. Which, as far as I'm concerned, is fine. I mean, it's harmless and a bit silly, but fine. Obviously, as is nothing to do with agile, well, of course, when things go wrong, people are perfectly entitled to say, do we have to do it this way? Which, of course, has always been the case. And, you know, and I think people sort of sometimes complain, you know, could we have a real customer, please? This is a typical complaint. That's one of them. It's nothing to do, of course, because, as we said, agile is just an agreement, and you have to agree with the people around you. You can't agree with a piece of paper or a website or anything. You have to sit there and go, well, let's try and work this way. We sort of know that this works. And the further we go from that, we have to work things out more. But that's all there is to it. But you know, there is a rough complaint that certainly, you know, the working day gets interfered with a lot of stuff that shouldn't be there. And probably better not to have that. But you know, that's the same everywhere else, really. So, but I think for me, it was just this surprise when we put this joke site up about how corporates actually view Agile, who are perfectly happy to look at Agile, that they add their own statements and completely countermand the original things. And how many people just looked at that and said, yeah, that's us. It was fairly remarkable, I have to say. You know.
Yeah, I don't think it's any better anywhere. I think that the understanding, because it's now such a... It really distresses me because it's absolutely right. It was the right thing to do, but because it has turned into such a buzzword. I mean, obviously, there was a real problem. There is a real problem. And that's why it has taken off. You know, people implicitly feel in big organisations or small organisations that IT are letting them down. When you hear this all the time, so you know they're desperate, and so something that appears to be, you know, a bunch of persuasive people come along about Agile, and now there's a massive backlash. And I don't think it's any better in small companies, and the problem is that it doesn't, because it doesn't mean anything now, everybody just attaches their own meaning to it. So, you know...
It's become cloud. It's become...
Yeah, exactly.
Sorry, I was listening to Tim Berners-Lee, and he had on his slide Ajax Web 3.0. And I just wanted to say, if you're trying to sell the semantic web, despite being, you know, inventing the web, you're not helping at this point.
you invented the web. Now shut up.
Cool kids.
I saw a wonderful thing actually a while back. I can't find the link. I've been Googling for a few minutes. I can't find it. Somebody else might be able to find it. And it was, imagine if you ran a restaurant using the waterfall method. And it would be, you know, customers come in at 7 o'clock in the evening. You spend an hour taking everyone's order, going around the room taking everyone's order, with the chefs in the back doing nothing. Then you go back and you cook everything, all three courses. And then at 10 o'clock, you bring out all three courses. And then you keep everyone waiting until 11 o'clock, until they've all finished. Then they all have to pay at the same time. Then anyone who's got complaints has to hang around till 1 o'clock in the morning, when the chefs will finish up and cook them some more.
Yeah. I mean, you know, maybe. But the trouble is that what Waterfall gives you is those engineering things. And companies who like engineering... The surprising thing is that there are a large number of companies who actually like the engineering way. And if I could just bring in the Apple thing again, you know, I think one of the interesting things is that at the same time as we've got the let's do things in a very agile way, and let me finish that point first, let's do things in a very agile way, we've also got, there's another thing going on, which is let's do things the Apple way. I think Apple, I certainly know people who are conscious of what Apple do. What Apple do is not agile at all. Apple make products and take their time over it. You know, everybody says, I keep saying that actually what comes out in the end is almost just, it's almost as crap as the stuff I throw out the door. But you know, that's my view about everything being crap. But, you know, to other people, what they produce is marvellous. You know, they spend a long time producing something and it's fantastic when it comes out the door, and it's definitely not agile. So it's interesting because you have those basic two things, and a lot of people who don't understand either.
I'm not sure you're right about Apple not being agile, and I'm not saying this because I'm a rampant Apple fanboy. I mean, from all reports which come out of Apple, they are notoriously quiet about everything and don't let all their employees talk in public, which is crap. With very few exceptions, they are, you know, completely off the grid of conversation. I'd strongly disagree with that, because I mean they've from what we've heard, it's, you know, there's this sort of slogan which people use about Apple. They say it's, you know, the world's largest startup, and then it's run with for the size of the company, and you look at the size of the company compared to the number of employees they have working on design and whatever, they keep their team small, and they have things like, I mean, well, with the iPad and the iPhone, for instance, basically the story has come out since that they'd actually designed the iPad first and had got a pretty solid working prototype, and then decided, no, actually, we want to do the phone. They kind of looked at the phone market and thought, this is shit. We need to do something about this.
Well, it's a way in, wasn't it? I mean, I mean, the evidence was there wasn't that much interest in tablets, but there was interest in phones. So,
so they sort of spun it all around pretty quickly and got the phone out. And the first iPhone was, you know, looked very pretty and had a wonderful kind of UI and whatever else. But in terms of features and kind of whatever, it was pretty poor. And that seems to suggest that it was kind of cobbled together quite quickly from the remnants of the pre-existing iPad, and then they've been iterating on that. I mean, the thing is that Apple doesn't seem agile because they don't really discuss their process, and they don't seem agile because what their actual end goal is that they have to, they are basically producing a product based solely around this one man's ego.
I mean, without knowing anything about their internal process, it's very hard to imagine how this is ever going to be anything like, well, we're using the term agile, but any other arbitrary process, given that one man is clearly doing all the direction from, you know, top to bottom. I can't see it being anything other than just do what Steve said.
I know a little bit about their internal process. I know people who work there and know people who have worked there who can speak a little more freely. And it, you know, it's on that basis that I call them non-agile. I think they, I think it is, as previously stated here, I think it is pretty much centred around what Steve wants and what Steve thinks. And
so that's customer collaboration then.
none of that.
Yeah, I mean, I don't see them doing it. The point about agile is that you have customers and you test things with them in short iterative steps. Now, in a corporation, in an enterprise, that means that you try and spec it out with the customer, and then you have the customer at the end of a month or after, you know, after your sprint or something, and you're trying to deliver X, Y, and Z of your deliverables. But it's not possible to do that with the general public. So it means that you've got to do things slightly differently. And my understanding is that the accepted way to do that is relatively short iterative steps. But Apple take at least 6 months between releases, and that's not relatively short. I mean, you know, fine, because they're a hardware company
It depends on what it is. I mean, if it's some of the operating system, I mean, there are bits of Apple which do things quicker than others, and it depends on which bit you're talking about. And it's like any.
Well, you were just holding the phone up as an example of something that they iterated on, and yes, they did iterate on it. But just because you iterated on something doesn't mean it's agile. Just because you did it relatively quickly for a hardware product, that doesn't make it agile either. I don't think they did do it relatively quickly, and I don't think they iterated very quickly. Look at what HTC do. I hate to bring up that argument again because it's not relevant to what I'm talking about, but you know, Nokia even, they throw out, what, 20 handsets a year?
Yeah, true.
Similarly, HTC are throwing out probably 50 or 60 this year.
Yeah, but here's the thing. What I'm saying is that just because what Apple actually produce at the end of it doesn't look to the general public like it's been through an agile development process doesn't mean that internally it hasn't been. I mean, you know,
from what I understand,
just because the tablets come down like Moses on the hill doesn't mean that, you know, it's that they haven't been written in the wiki in the first place.
Sure, yeah.
That's how I understand it. I mean, I sort of really had views of, you know, sort of Steve Jobs on the toilet with his acolytes outside listening, and he's just, you know, literally, and he's shitting out the next product. And they go, I have it here! His acolytes come in, clean it up, and send it to the press without further question. That's what it seems like to me. Because, you know, he pretty much tells people what they have to like, and they do, which is brilliant.
Conversation...
I'm never going to look at my iPod Touch the same way ever again.
The conversation, it must have been difficult to pass on.
That's why it's genius. Come on.
The conversation about Apple TV. The conversation about the iPad and the iPhone and stuff like that, we know went on for a while inside Apple, of Steve being very sceptical about it, saying, you know, the only place you can use one of these is on the shitter. And is that really compelling enough? And obviously, indeed, obviously something convinced him in the end, but... So you are allowed to have ideas. It's not. I don't think it's like that Steve is the only source of ideas. But nonetheless, he has to be convinced of anything. I think he's not one of these sort of CEOs just at the top gathering good ideas and throwing them back out again. He's definitely Apple. But I take issue with the fact that they're agile. I don't believe they are, and I don't believe they're perceived to be, and that's really the crux of my point. The point is that you've got this thing, process that is getting more and more popular, where people understand that it's about throwing stuff out, seeing if it works, and if it does, that's great. You know, do things as quickly as possible, and a lot of it might be crap, but as long as you get the main points of the thing right, that's the main thing, and then you can test it and iterate. Well,
I suppose we might have an example here, because they came out with this ping thing, which I really don't know anything about, but it seems to be some vague social...
It's strange, don't worry about it.
Yeah, social content. Now, the interesting thing is, will they just throw it away a la Google, or will they try to improve it? Now, the interesting thing is, will they try to improve it based on the fact that a lot of people are telling them, clearly it's shit? You know, which...
I think they probably will. I think they're probably... They're not going to throw it away like Google have, because it's obviously something they can fix. I mean, it's not exactly, you know, difficult for them to fix it. They make it better and they release a new web app.
But this is just a... We're turning into a news podcast if we're going to talk about that. And that does not...
I just introduced it because it's an example, maybe.
I don't think it's an example, though. I don't agree that it's an example. I think iTunes, you could talk about iTunes, because that's a product, a fully formed product. Bing sort of slight iteration on top of iTunes, as far as I can see. You know, they're attempting to play with ideas of social media on top of iTunes. Fair enough. You know, that doesn't, to me, mean that the whole company is iterative. Look at what iTunes was. iTunes, when it came out, is it radically different from what iTunes is now? No.
Because
it's a pretty well-designed, well-researched product. They'd got the agreement of the media companies before they went live with it. You know, they'd done all of those jobs. They'd worked it out. They designed it. They released a fully formed working product. They did not do what a hacker or an agile person would do, maybe what Napster did.
Not many people know the history of iTunes. It's out. Actually, it used to be a program called... It used to be a program made by a company called Cassidy and Green called SoundJam MP Plus.
That's a much better name.
Which they basically bought and turned it from being a $39 shareware Mac application into being a free Mac application, and then added all the iTunes and MP3 player and iPod and all that stuff into it. It's not even their own software. It's just kind of... They've bought it and added stuff, and then completely rebuilt the interface, because, God, I remember SoundJam MP Plus. It was horrible.
This is what you imagine. Something called SoundJam MP Plus?
It was the best of the Mac. That's the ridiculous thing. It was actually one of the best MP3 players for the Mac pre OS X.
I still think it's... if I might digress for a moment, music players have been getting my goat just recently. And it's just gobsmacking that nobody can make a decent one. I mean, nobody. I haven't seen a decent one.
They are all shit in their own unique ways.
They are, yeah. Absolutely. Let me really digress for a moment and explain... Two things that I hate. I've got two. I've got one called XF Media, which is for XFCE, graphical environment I happen to use, and it's all very good, but it doesn't scrobble, and there's no interface to allow you to scrobble. And I really like scrobbling. You know,
pushing my face up the,
similar, except it involves LastFM. And it gives you all that social media stuff that Ping is supposed to be giving you, and, you know, conversations with people about music and recommendations and yada yada yada. And I do use it. I buy tracks from LastFM because it tells me that something is similar to something else. That's great. You know, I'm a 40-year-old man. I don't go to nightclubs anymore. I don't hear new music. That, you know, so I need someone to tell me what's hip and cool, so you know I can listen to it, daddy-o.
No, the nice thing about LastFM is it doesn't tell you what's cool. It tells you what you might like, rather than what the latest hipster shit is.
It's reinforcing... Well, of course, I am a hipster as well, so that it is telling me what the latest hipster shit is. But, that one doesn't do that. So I started to use VLC, because that scrobbles. Do you know what VLC does? VLC doesn't even remember the directory that you opened the last playlist from. So you have to constantly... You have a directory of music or something like that, and you have to constantly go back to that directory. It's so tedious. There's two Linux apps in their own very as you say, particular ways, they are really shit.
I'm pretty sure the least insufferable things on Linux are either Rhythmbox or Banshee.
Both of which are kind of iTunes-y, and I really, yeah. I just don't like that. I don't like having to organise my music like that, because I've, for a very long time, have organised it in a directory structure. So, yeah.
Well, the thing is that iTunes automatically organises it in a directory structure quite nicely.
Sure, but that's their directory structure that I'd have to use, as opposed to mine that I've been using for a very long time. So, yeah. You know,
yeah, there's impedance. I'm on a Mac, I use iTunes, and I really fucking hate iTunes 10. They've really screwed some fundamentally important shit up. The good side of it is that they've actually made it perform well, which is a nice thing to have, you know, less crashes, you know, all that shit. The bad thing is they've basically said, all right, I'm Steve Jobs. I've designed this lovely human interface guideline, or one of my minions has. Now I'm going to take this human interface guideline and put it to one side and design something new. And Apple do this about every 3 years, and it always starts with iTunes, and it always looks shit. And they completely screw everything up after everyone gets just about comfortable with it. They then decide to throw everything away and make it look shit. And then you have to use a whole bunch of hacks to make it look okay. Which is quite annoying, because it was actually all right before. I guess what it is a secret plan to make everyone actually stop slagging off iTunes, because if they find new ways for you to slag it off, you won't be complaining about the old things.
Oh, it's like new Coke and old Coke. Go new Coke. That was terrible! Oh, I'll go back to the old Coke.
Okay.
Like, yeah, we're like, oh, that was fine.
Problem is the fact that iTunes may suck, but all the others don't have some of the basic features which iTunes has. Like, if you're listening to an audiobook, you press pause, and you shut the application, you open it up again, and start listening to the audiobook, it should start from the beginning again, right? Same with podcasts. It's like, no. The reason for that is because you've got people who design this software evidently haven't used a tape player, which has had this feature since tape players began existing. And they've only grown up with CD players, and they don't think anyone's going to be listening to anything longer than about 4 minutes, and so it doesn't matter if you start from the beginning again. Actually storing where you are in the file is quite important if you're listening to anything longer than a pop song.
You mean if you pause it and shut down,
yeah.
It doesn't seek to the...
That is quite funny, yeah. Actually. Yeah, that's a bit shit.
Yeah, that's terrible. Isn't it?
That sounds like a bug.
That's basic. In all applications that I've tried, except iTunes, almost none of them have that. And certainly I haven't been able to find any on Linux that do, which is pretty much the only reason if I could get that, and the important bit is to have that sync to the mobile device, so that if you're listening to an audiobook, you have the same feature that you have when reading a physical book, namely a bookmark, and have the bookmark sync between the device and the computer. That is pretty much the only thing which keeps me in the whole iTunes... I mean, this is, you know, excluding the whole, iPad apps thing, but I could live without most of those if push came to shove. That's the only thing which really kind of gets iTunes and the like actually... keeps me on there, because nobody else has seemed to implement this. And you've got all these people who what I don't understand is why all the companies who make MP3 players other than Apple, Microsoft, SanDisk, all these guys don't get their shit together and actually improve make a decent cross-platform MP3 playing software that syncs with these devices.
Well, there isn't going to be an Android equivalent of a generalised one everyone could just use.
Well, there is no Android iPod yet.
Exactly. Yeah. Stopping them.
The only actual Android kind of iPod that's not a phone, and it's just a media player, tablets, and they're loads of money, which you can't really say is a replacement.
Well, no, because Archos have just come out with a bunch of iPhone-sized Android computers. I mean, you can't really call these things tablets because they're tiny.
Mm.
I think they call them tablets, but to me,
oh yeah, there is one coming out. I think Samsung are doing one as well. But it's been
based
a long
on
time
their phone. Yeah, yeah. But Archos 2 weeks ago released a range of, I think, 5 devices that go up in scale from something that's $100 or £100 or something for a handheld, you know, iPhone sized Android computer, which obviously can play music, up to the sort of full iPad tablet size type thing. The tablet is
when you say size type thing, you mean form factor.
Yeah. Yes, I do. Yes.
Thank you. Come on, let's use the right shitty terms.
Hey, we're not Engadget Gizmodo freaks. We prefer Hacker News. All
right.
Oh, we should be doing the box opening next week, where we open the sellotape around the packet. Fuck's sake.
I did see somebody saying that they'd gone and bought a box of chocolates and they were thinking about doing an unboxing. It's like, I've got my box of celebrations. Get the camera. Oh, look, it's a mini Mars bar.
And they take about 20 minutes to do those things. They're absolutely absurd. I just always want to, when it gets to the point of it's about 5 minutes in and he's described the packaging, and you're fucking looking at it in the video, so you don't need him to describe the packaging. I just want somebody to just come running in and rugby tackle him out of shot. I think that would be improve those things tremendously.
That would be good. Yeah, the camera just stays there and you hit.
Thud. I think my
table vibrates slightly. You know,
my favourite unboxing video was it was one of the iPhones, it was an unboxing video. Somebody bought the iPhone on the first day and was like the first unboxing video to come out. And for some reason, because we were on another podcast, we were taking the piss out of unboxing videos, so we decided to watch a few. I won't name the podcast for fear of offending everyone. So this was ages ago, and the guy got the box out of the bag, and he used his key, like his car key or whatever, to take the cellophane off. And then I read in the comments on YouTube, "Oh my God, you might scratch the box. Don't do that." It's like, it's a cardboard box, for Christ's sake. So
wait a sec. Does anyone know, did these originate from people opening boxes of sneakers? Is that where this unboxing came from?
Probably, yeah.
I've never seen it. I sort of vaguely remember, but it's sort of grown into its own sort of...
Is that right? I thought it was a uniquely tech thing, because there's always stuff in the box.
I don't think so. I sort of have this memory of people unboxing... You know, people used to buy sneakers each week, different ones and so forth.
Yeah.
I seem to remember these started to get on YouTube, but it's such a completely different thing now. I'm scrambling to think whether it's the same thing or not. I don't know. So, Tom, you're a young person. Can you remember how this...
I'm a young person who's not nearly trendy enough to watch anything related to sneakers on YouTube.
Tom is only technically a young person.
He's an old fogey.
I'm young in age, old in spirit. I don't know where it came from. I'm just looking at the BBC News article saying that it has the line, internet phenomenon, and some argue the geekiest pastime known to man. It then has a description of an unboxing video for a BlackBerry Storm 9630, and an interview with a guy who created such videos.
Yeah, but the BBC site's probably full of people like you, Tom, who can't remember anything. You know, I don't know. I'm going to have to explore that because I really want to know where this started. I'm sure it was something that was things.
You may be right. Although I just want to make a point about that. The geekiest thing. That's why I don't like geek. Right? Because that's the geekiest thing, right? I want to be associated with people for whom the ultimate pursuit is making something, not recording myself un-fucking opening a package I've just bought from the Apple Store.
Yep.
Fuck's sake. That's the epitome of my community. Is videoing myself opening a box that cost me $300. Oh.
Or that's more. Art. That is modern art.
The one I saw actually a while back was somebody did...
That's what Damien Hirst would do.
I actually
that.
Saw...
No, Damien would cut in off and then cook it.
Probably, I yeah.
Think, isn't that the people who put it in the blender?
Will it blend, you mean? Yeah.
And the endless speculation about whether or not it was a fake iPad they blended or not, or whatever.
I just love what Smiley does in the middle of the 50s. Yeah. His camera. Brilliant.
I actually saw an unboxing video a while back for the 20th Century Mac, which is perhaps the most expensive Mac Apple have ever produced. It was $20,000. And for the $20,000, they'd actually get an engineer, dress him up in a tuxedo, and put him in a limousine to bring the Mac around to your office. And for some reason, they decided to keep this in storage for about 10 years and then unbox it for YouTube, which just says everything you need to know about how weird people are on the
internet. So if they did this correctly, obviously you pay $20,000, they come around and mug you because clearly you don't know how to use your own money, and they should force you to give all your money to charity. That's what should have actually happened.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was going to say, I hope that whoever the... You implied that it was a company. I mean, if that was a company, I want to know who it is, so... I can remove any shares I might have.
Yeah, or go to their next annual general meeting and throw them out. Yeah.
It was a very nice computer, but you know, it's probably about the same power as my desktop calculator now. So $20,000.
What was nice about it? Why was it worth $20,000 apart from the engineer and the tuxedo and the car?
Well, it just had very high specs, and what was it? It had flat screen back when everyone was using CRTs, and it was.
It wasn't gold or something like that.
No, it was black, and it had a very very sexy design, and you know, stuff like that. I'm trying to pull up the specs. Actually, can't get hold of them, but it was a pretty amazing machine. It was basically like a. Where is it?
Basically, it wasn't a production machine. I mean, that's all you're saying, I guess.
No, it was.
Hence the price.
I tell you what it was, but I can't. But Google seems to be failing me. That's another thing I want to rant about. Fucking Google Instant, man.
Oh, I love it. I love. This is Google again. Yeah. I love it. I love the fact they released this thing called Google Instant, and using it, go. Yeah, you have a vague seasick effect as it comes on, and then you realise, wait a minute. How did they decide this was a feature, or in fact, even useful? Well, I mean, it's harmless.
I was using it's not the other
a feature.
I was using it the other day, and all I wanted to do. Was go to the Scala docs for Array, right? This is how fucking, you know, annoying it was. All I was typing in Scala Array docs. I just wanted to see the docs. And so I typed this in. It would then have, right at the top of the list, Scala Array. I thought, oh, great. Enter. And then it all disappears and completely different search results come up.
That's
and
pretty
think,
good.
This is what? Why are you giving me different search results in instant than when I press enter? Surely, if I've typed in a string, it should be showing me the same results as when I hit enter. What?
I didn't really get that either. Did you see Roy Fielding complaining about it?
No, I didn't.
Roy Fielding, on the night they released it, he had a massive rant about it. Roy Fielding has a Twitter account. But you can find it. But he tweets like about once a month.
Mm. Who owns Day Software now? Can't even remember. Someone bought.
Oh, him. I can't either. But he's not always very informative. So you're waiting for the like once every 3 months when he says something that is genuine.
I've invented rest.
Yeah, yeah. But. On the night they released Instant, there was about 10 tweets with Roy going, I bloody hate this, it's right. And his point was, and I didn't quite understand it, his point was, it's a filter. They're deciding what you're going to see. It's built for speed, and that's fine, but they're not telling users that it's built for speed and that it's filtering stuff. And I didn't really understand his point, but it's obviously doing something that I don't understand, because you experienced the same thing, right? It gave you different search results. And that's what he was so upset about.
Yeah. He did retweet a very amusing tweet. In light by Van Ben Eep. And since we haven't had many giggles on this show, I better repeat it. In light of instant search, I suggest a new motto for Google. Forget don't be evil. Go with at least don't be clippy.
What's Clippy ever done? I don't know.
Clippy.
Somebody said once. Actually, I saw a thing a while back, and somebody said, you know, if Steve Jobs, if you were to choose a product to represent the founder of a company, then the old lampshade iMac would probably represent Steve Jobs, and Clippy would represent Bill Gates.
He'd probably be happy with that.
Mm. He probably would. Yeah, that's very. It is very Bill, isn't it?
Yeah.
I've never met Bill, but.
I've never met Clippy either.
I walked away from Clippy fairly soon after he appeared in my life. And somebody was talking about WordPerfect 5.1 today. I love WordPerfect 5.1, and I love pointing out that it was a really, really terrible, you know, not GUI design at all, and people were perfectly able to use it.
Yeah, I want to do, right? I want to go back and find all those early episodes of The Bill where people are typing on, like, green screen terminals, right? And pull them out and say, hey, look, these are supposed to be normal people. They're using command lines.
Like, yeah.
last time was at police station. They were using green screen terminals. I'm not sure.
That's more because, you know, public sector, no money, blah, blah, blah. The Google Instant, horrible. Absolutely horrible. And Google are like, on the other hand, they give me Priority Inbox, which is just absolutely lovely.
Priority Inbox, that annoys me. Priority Inbox, it's a marketing gimmick, Dave. What they've done is to add a feature so that you can tag things, and then they appear in the Priority Inbox. It's basically a way, I can see the thought process, and it really annoys me. Somebody in Google said, people are really having a hard time and this whole inbox zero thing is happening. We should make something for that to be easier. And so they come along and they say, yeah, well, we'll just add a feature to make you basically do your inbox zero easier. And it's a complete cheat. It just annoys me. I don't know why it annoys me. It just annoys me because they're cheating.
Well, it actually seems to work for me. Like, the stuff I actually need to respond to seems to get into the priority. And all the newsletters and, you know, crap gets in the normal inbox. That's because I'm lazy at filtering, probably.
Yes.
I looked at Gmail for about 2 minutes and just said no and went back to Outlook. I mean, I still have a Gmail account, but I really can't stand it. I mean, I wouldn't use it over any period of time. I mean, it's now this ridiculous thing where I actually only have a virtual pretty much to run Outlook, which is a bit sad to admit. but I've not found any other mail program I even vaguely like. I mean, Mart, this is the.
I regressed into my, you know, angry. Nick can replace Mart with Emacs, I guess, here.
Although Emacs doesn't do the whole job, unfortunately.
GNUs, or whatever it's called.
Yeah, I don't like GNUs much. Emacs crowd is split into two camps of people who do like GNUs and people who don't. And I've never used GNUs. I wrote my own mail client in eLisp, because it was IMAP based, it kind of died when my IMAP server just got flooded with too much information. I am totally stuck at the moment, and I've been trying to re-engineer my access to mail for about 2 years. Because I hate Mutt, and I hate Outlook, and I hate the bloody Netscape one, whatever that was called.
Thunderbird.
Oh, it's terrible.
Thunderbird's our no-go.
And I really, really hate Gmail. And what I can't stand about Gmail is all the people who tell me, oh, just use Gmail, it's brilliant. Oh, shut the fuck up.
So I've been using... I had got Mutt almost perfectly set up, but unfortunately I'm using this thing called Offline IMAP, and it suffers a bit of the old Debian package maintainer problem. like the Ubuntu package maintainer or whoever like fucks it up or doesn't put the right version in or gets the right version in but it's tied up with the wrong version of Python and all the usual shit you get with package managers.
Yeah.
And so it always breaks and I always have to go in and manually edit the Python code to unfix the things which are broken. And
yeah, I'd be a bit pissed off if I couldn't read my mail because I had to rewrite my client.
It's not that I have to. It's just that I have it running automatically in, as a cron job in the background, and it then doesn't run automatically in a cron job. And I log into my email, and there's like nothing for the last 3 days, and I'm like, what the fuck, and have to go in and manually fix it all, which is a bit of a pain when you actually just want to read your email.
It is a really difficult problem to solve, though, and I know because I've been trying to solve it for a couple of years. And it comes down to the fact that you don't want to transfer, the mail folder can veer so much so quickly, and it's really difficult. There's no transactional system that you can use. It's basically you've got file copying or you use IMAP. And if you use IMAP, all you're doing is moving the problem onto the server, and then you've got to have all that remote stuff.
Well,
so
what I do is offline IMAP is quite nice because it's a Python script which does reasonably intelligent syncing of your mail directory with an IMAP server.
Mm-hmm.
So I can actually use it offline, and MUT doesn't go to a crawl when I'm using it over 3G or whatever. So there's an alternative. Have you looked at SUP? It's basically MUT.
As in what, SUP?
SUP, yeah.
Yeah.
It's basically MUT rewritten by Ruby hipsters.
I have looked at it.
It's a bit better then.
I have looked at it. What I don't like about it, though, because... I tell you what I do want, and what I've been working on for a long time, and we're kind of getting off the point of this podcast, but what shocks me, it's another thing that I used to be grumpy about, but kind of aren't anymore because I've nearly fixed it, is MailDir is brilliant. Right? MailDir sits underneath most of these mail programs, and it's a really nice way of storing mail. It's very, very clever.
Yeah.
And you don't have to have locks or anything. It really works well. But nobody writes clients, nobody writes mail software for MailDir.
They write
stuff.
Inbox, yeah.
They write stuff on top of MailDir. So you get IMAP servers that are capable of MailDir, and you get POP servers that are capable of MailDir, and you get MTAs that are capable of MailDir. But nobody actually writes a client directly for that. Except MUT and whatever the Ruby one that you just mentioned.
SUP, yeah.
SUP.
SUP.
But they are really, really console-based and just as sort of wrapped up and, not hackable and totally closed. What I want is a sort of like MC or whatever it's called, the mail command line tool, so I can write my own, a bunch of interfaces, because some things I want to do in a browser and some things I want to do in Emacs and some things I want to do from the command line.
Yeah.
But MUT is kind of, no, you're going to use the console interface all the time. It is a command line, but it's not a command line.
Yeah.
I can't take something out of MUT, pipe it through something else and then back and, and that, just why is mail reading so un-Unixy? It's such a big thing that we've got to do, and there aren't any decent Unix tools for it. And by Unix, I mean pipes, redirection, sitting nicely inside a shell script.
Well, don't worry, because there aren't any nice Mac GUI utilities for it. There aren't any nice Windows GUI utilities, and there aren't any nice Linux GUI utilities. There's just no fucking nice way of reading mail at all.
Outlook's fine. Well, okay.
It's no,
fine.
It's not.
Okay, sorry. That's terrible. Yeah. So anyway, that's been chewing up a lot of my time over the last 2 years, and I'm nearly there, and it's so frustrating because it is difficult to do. And I'm at the stage now where I've got a folder of all my mail for the last 2 years, and I've got like 4,000 messages that have got no date on them. So I've got a bunch of filtering to do. Yeah.
Or you could use Google Wave. I hear that's really good.
What's
that?
Email.
No!
If only it had replaced email.
Well, then it could be even more annoying.
Yeah.
You could have had an email notification for when your email replacement had a... What? That's the thing somebody said, you know, the great problem with Google Wave, if it's supposed to replace email and it then suddenly gets an email notification system.
Yeah, okay. That's a little tough.
But, anyway.
It's just not working tonight, though, is it?
Yeah, it's been a bit
Badum-tish.
Of a... Yeah, it's a grower, I expect. I know, wait, that's something else.
Not like Google Wave, which is a dire.
Ooh. We don't say things are dead on here because they never are.
Except the web.
The web's dead, yeah.
The web's dead, yeah.
Office is dead, which is why I still had to open PowerPoint files. Right, with that, I think we should wrap it up. So, any final remarks?
When I don't have a cold, I'm much funnier when I don't have a cold.
I think that's a good excuse. And it's contagious too.
Can we all use that excuse?
Yeah.
I think we're just lacking Ian. We're just lacking manic laughter in the background.
Yeah, I don't know why TV programs need laugh tracks. They could just get Ian in.
Yeah, it could do.
He can't be everywhere at once. That's why.
Well, he can't even be here at once.
Time. He was here the last two nights. It's just
but you
nice.
Were. Oh, typical.
I was actually I was over the air on Friday night, and I actually found a quiet spot to record the thing, and it was quite funny because they were actually going to put you know those things they have at museums, like the ropes at museums. They were going to put one of those around me.
Right,
Jesus, Tom, you're not that big. What's their problem?
With a little sign at the bottom saying, you know, tech grump, do not touch.
So you were telling me that you overheard somebody saying famous.
Somebody came up to me in the cafe or the bar cafe area OpenTech yesterday and said, "Oh, you're one of those grumpy arseholes, aren't you?" Which I said, "Well, I dispute the second part, but you know, yes,
you're a primo grumpy arsehole."
We could rename the podcast.
It turned out that he used to be Ian's flatmate, so.
It's not just random people knew him. That's
a bit disappointed, really.
He then did tell me that he stopped listening because he was very frustrated at hearing Nick just being a free software nut.
Freetard, yeah.
And he just couldn't cope with that, so he's stopped listening to that. But otherwise, he said he greatly enjoyed it.
It really shocks me, that reaction. I'm constantly shocked by that.
He's just guilty about his Windows machine or his Mac or whatever, whereas I think, give a shit.
Yeah, I think so. I was really shocked that the other week when we had that nice big group, and I forget who it was, but somebody was just accusing you of not being an Apple user. You're not a real Apple user.
Me?
You're just a Linux user.
Oh, yeah, no, Amazon said that.
Yeah, I'm just.
Well, it was someone else who just. Yeah, it was just very accusatory.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's because I spend most of my time in a command line.
Sure.
It means I'm not a real Mac user.
Yeah, obviously not.
The fact that I can all, you know, that I'm sorry, not all command tabbing over to iTunes and you know, whatever else. But.
You see, I find it. I'm sitting here quite upset about this bloke that you met because I'm just gobsmacked that people don't want to hear this. People are not worried about freedom at all. And they're quite happy to sell their souls to a company and get screwed over and then complain about it. And, you know, we all complain about it endlessly with cars and...
I reckon it's because they like complaining.
Yeah, maybe.
It's the whole self-flagellation thing. People like complaining, which is why we're doing this program. We like complaining. But they like to have a reason... Yeah.
We're doing this program because it's supposed to be funny.
Well, yeah, that too.
I'm
very, very sorry, listeners.
Not funny. Maybe the listeners aren't funny either. Maybe if they were more funny.
You know. Yeah, I'm sure that's part of it. So to be philosophical for a moment, it's something Amazon said.
Let's make some fart jokes. Go ahead, be philosophical.
So it's something Amazon said a while ago as well, you know, realising that Nick Ferrier might not be a total free time. Well, hang on. I'm not I'm not sure I agree with Freetard, but I am more interested in freedom than shiny things. And it does strike me that a lot of people are more interested in shiny things than freedom. And that really bothers me.
Well, we can all unite in hating Microsoft.
I like Microsoft.
Oh, wait, we can't.
Apart from Dave.
Sorry.
We're all individuals.
Exactly. I won't even respond to that one.
I have to say, I was very proud that over the air I fell asleep in the Windows Phone 7 session.
Windows Phone 7 looks cool!
I don't think Ian's going to be happy. He would have been getting a stiffy in that session. But I just found it tremendously boring, because basically it was... The session boiled down to, hey, we're doing everything like Apple did with the iPhone, only it's Windows and Silverlight.
Yeah, but like things like Jiggle About and things.
I haven't seen any video of it, so I can't be that excited about Jiggly bits.
I think your life will change if you see a video of it. You'll go, this is completely different.
Mm.
Or you might not, I don't know. I'll leave it to you.
They did have a very nice Helvetica in most of their applications, which seemed to be the primary attraction. Compared to Windows Mobile 6.5, where it just looked like arse.
Okay, I've just worked out.
They're just comparing the previous Windows. Okay, that's going to be a bit of an issue.
I've just, listening to you talk about this stuff, I've just worked out what I believe the difference is between me and that kind of stuff. And it's not, I'm not obsessed with freedom, but I want to make things. I don't want to use other people's stuff. I'm a notorious not invented here type. My team at Rumi just get really cross with me sometimes. Because I want to make things. I want to make my own mail client, because none of the ones that other people make get anywhere near to being satisfying for me for something that I have to use a lot. Well, I want to make my own music player, because for the same reason. You know, I would love to make my own laptop. I would love to make my own phone. And so forth. And I recall somebody, Abizern, I think, again, was saying, God, you guys, do you ever get anything done? I get tons done. Partly because I make my own tools all the time. Like a good carpenter, I spend a lot of time making my own tools. So they're absolutely perfect for me. They probably wouldn't be any good for anybody else. Although I'm quite happy to make them available for other people. I'm making them for me, most of all. And that's really different. So, if you want to call me a tard, please call me a make tard.
What about free make tard?
How about a create tard?
Sounds like Freemason. Free
make tard. Those would do. Yeah, I'm not bothered by any of those.
Unfortunately, that's a term of abuse we usually use for creationists, create tards. But we can repurpose it for creatives.
Yeah, that would do.
So, Nick the create tard. You want to say goodbye?
Bye!
David Eastman, deep in the heart of the Enterprise Beast, want to say goodbye?
Goodbye!
And that's bye from me. See you whenever we can be bothered to do this shit. Bye!